This is Audible.
Shadow Mountain presents Dragon Watch, Book 2, Wrath of the Dragon King by Brandon Mull. This unabridged presentation is performed for you by Kirby Hayborn. Chapter 1. Old Friends. The red-maned dragon coiled in the courtyard, rippling scales flashing in the sunlight, tail swishing lazily. Prowling forward, the lengthy body unfurled, several sets of legs working to bring the leonine head ever closer to the lone boy. Yawning, the dragon displayed a jagged array of yellowed fangs surrounding a fat tongue. "What's the matter?" the dragon inquired in a slightly mocking tone. "Speak. Move." Large nostrils approached the boy's face and flared, sniffing. The nearby mouth was probably big enough to swallow him whole, or at least to bite off the top half of his body. Seth willed himself to lean away, to lift an arm, to murmur a reply. His body refused to respond. He could not twitch a finger. He could not glance away. He was utterly paralyzed by dragon fear. "Nothing?" the dragon asked. "You're not really in any danger."
"I know," Seth wanted to say. "You're my assistant."
Marat usually stayed in human form, but he had made an exception today after Seth had requested a chance to test his ability to resist dragon fear. If his sister Kendra could do it, there had to be a way.
"Come on, Seth,"
chimed a little voice from his pocket. Calvin, champion of the Nipsies, could keep his composure in the presence of a dragon, and he was only a couple of inches tall.
"Try smiling. When I was just a boy, I remember my papa could smile his way out of anything."
Seth could hear Calvin, but couldn't turn his head to see him. Seth could breathe. He could feel his heart beating. But his mouth refused to form words. His muscles would not budge, not even pull his lips into a smile. He was a dragon tamer while holding Kendra's hand, but now he was speechless and immovable. This wasn't fair. She could maintain her composure while confronting a dragon alone, even in the presence of Celebrant, the Dragon King. What made all of this even more humiliating was that this encounter was staged. Seth knew the dragon was a friend and meant him no harm. There was no rational reason to fear. Why couldn't his intellect overpower his instincts? Was he really this spineless? The long body reeled in as the dragon shrank into a mild Asian man in elaborate silken robes. The climate of fear evaporated, and Seth could move.
"I wasn't scared," Seth insisted.
"Very few can resist dragon terror," Marat said.
"Sure, I was frozen," Seth admitted, "but I wasn't afraid."
"Your mind was free?" Marat asked. "That is something. But I still could have killed you at my leisure."
"Am I just not desperate enough?" Seth asked.
"Petrified people are routinely devoured by dragons," Marat said. "They remain immobilized throughout the process. Trust me, all of them are plenty desperate."
What made the difference for Kendra? Seth wondered.
"She is very kind," Marat said. "She found a way to bring her power to bear. As a shadow charmer, you might in time do likewise."
"Any tips?" Seth asked. "I need to master this."
The dragons are madder than ever, especially at me after we got the scepter.
I'm no shadow charmer, Marat said, and I don't feel dragon terror. You need a different tutor. Have you asked your sister?
No way, Seth said. Her power is different from mine. What's she going to teach me? How to befriend fairies?
Kendra could teach anyone a great many things, Marat said. Perhaps your reluctance relates to her being your sister?
Of course it does, Seth said. Who wants their sister to teach them anything?
My sister helped me learn arithmetic,
Calvin piped up from his pocket. Big deal, Seth said. That's just math. Kendra can talk to dragons alone, and I can't.
Your Nipsey might have ideas, Marat said.
I'm not sure I can help much, Calvin said. I don't have techniques like holding my breath or crossing my fingers. My only advice is not to get scared.
You don't get scared of dragons? Seth asked.
Not to where it freezes me, Calvin said. I can't explain how or why, except I don't really get scared of anything.
Really? Seth asked.
I know dragons could kill me, Calvin clarified. I don't want to die or get maimed. The danger makes me alert, not scared.
Marat, I want to try again, Seth said. Get ready for alertness.
Could you perhaps pause your exercises for a moment?
A voice asked from behind Seth. He turned to find Agate emerging from a door into the courtyard. The wizard, dressed in traveling clothes and a cloak, was followed by Newell, Doran, and Tanu. The arrival caught Seth so off guard that he hardly knew where to look first. It had been longest since he had seen Tanu, so his eyes settled there. The Samoan potion master wore a large pack, and several pouches dangled from his belt. Still broad and thick, he looked a tad leaner than when Seth had last seen him.
"Tanu!" Seth cried. "Have you lost weight?"
"Not on purpose," he replied with a pained smile. "I have been swimming in choppy waters. Things are messy out there."
"We're here too," Newell said with a wave.
"Been eating well,"
Doran added, patting his belly. Seth had seen both satyrs just a couple of days before when he had gone back to Fablehaven through the teleportation barrel.
"What are you guys doing here?"
"Things were getting dull without you around," Newell said. "We like to be where the action is," Doran said.
"Since when?" Seth challenged. "You guys run from everything."
Newell squinted one eye.
"We like to be in the vicinity of the action, not necessarily getting our hands dirty." "Or chopped off," Doran added.
"Life can be like television from the proper distance," Newell explained.
"Bringing the satyrs was my idea," Agate said. "Seth, I thought you would find value in their companionship during these troubled times."
"You told us there were acres of food," Doran accused.
"The storerooms beneath this keep are all I promised," Agate mumbled.
"Remember our road trip to see the Singing Sisters?" Newell asked Seth. "You introduced us to fast food and convenience stores. Any time we get permission to leave our designated preserve is a thrill."
"Especially if the food is good," Doran said, "and the company."
"Any news about Bracken?" Seth asked. Agate exchanged a glance with Tanu.
"No glad tidings," the wizard said. "He had been captured, and we found where he was being held, but he was already gone by the time we arrived. We have no idea who took him."
Seth hated to hear Bracken was lost, and he knew the news would devastate his sister.
"Do you think he's alive?"
"I suspect so," Agate said. "A quick examination of the horn he left with Kendra will confirm."
Seth walked up to Tanu. "Did you help find him?"
"I helped find his empty cell," Tanu said. "We were trying. Soaring cliffs has become a perdition of rampaging dragons.
We were lucky to get out alive.
Sounds like the kind of adventure best viewed from a distance,
Doran commented.
That's one way to put it, Tanu said. The world is turning upside down. I understand there has been commotion here as well.
The dragons tested our defenses, Seth said. It looked bad for a while. Kendra and I recovered a scepter that strengthened the keep's protections.
And you made a firmer enemy of Celebrant in the process, Marat said. The Dragon King's enmity was inevitable, Agate said. We are facing a global rebellion.
Wait a minute, Newell said. You told us there was unrest, not a worldwide rebellion.
Unrest here, Agate said. A global rebellion is underway. We're laboring to stop it. By no means is the uprising complete. You can tell because we're not all dead yet, Tanu said.
But Blackwell Keep is secure, Doran checked. And the storerooms?
Locked up tight, Agate said.
A long, low note was blown on a horn, the hollow sound gradually growing deeper before fading.
What was that? Doran asked.
Start of the satyr hunt, Tanu said with a grin.
The proud horn,
Marat said, turning his gaze toward the sky.
An unexpected dragon approaches. I think I may have left a scarf back at Fablehaven, Newell said, edging back toward the door. A real important one. Striped. I'll lend a hand, Doran offered.
The dragon can't harm us, Agate said. I told you the keep is protected.
What dragon? Seth asked.
Let's find out, Marat said.
Chapter 2 Invitation. When the proud horn blew, Kendra was sitting cross-legged atop the keep's outer wall, her back to the battlements, facing a semicircle of 9 fairies. All but one had dragonfly wings. The other was the stockiest, with wings like a beetle. They all seemed generally hardier than the Fablehaven fairies, still lithe and lovely, but somewhat more muscular and noticeably warier. Most of the fairies took flight at the sound of the horn, wings becoming a blur. The others were on their feet, ready to spring. Kendra stood and looked outward to find a gleaming dragon, smaller than most, gliding toward the perch, a tower at the edge of the keep designated for conversing with dragons.
"It's just Raxtus," one of the fairies chirped. "He's acting strange lately," another remarked.
"Almost like a dragon,"
a third said with a giggle. The other fairies tittered.
"I should go," Kendra said. "He must have come to talk."
"I thought we were talking,"
one of the fairies complained.
"It could be an emergency," Kendra said. "Thank you for attending. We'll meet again tomorrow. You have your assignments. Spread the word to the other fairies. I want to know about any suspicious dragon activity."
Kendra turned and started trotting toward the perch. Behind her, she heard fairies murmuring about how bossy she was, but decided to ignore them. Fairies were hard to manage, but they could move around Worm Roost with relative freedom and were small enough to be practically invisible to dragons. Because of Kendra's fairy kind status, they had to obey her, and so they could make excellent spies. The situation with the dragons had become critical. Kendra had openly defied Celebrant, and it was only a matter of time before the Dragon King struck back. Where and how the dragons would retaliate seemed impossible to predict, but Kendra suspected that when it came, it would potentially be catastrophic. It really didn't matter if the fairies complained about her, as long as they helped monitor the dragons. Henrik the Alcitor, gamekeeper of Worm Roost, came loping along the top of the wall to Kendra. He had the shaggy body of a moose, but from where the neck would normally be, there sprouted the torso of a man with broad shoulders, strong arms, and a stern face. Kendra had grown to trust Henrik when he had helped her and Seth retrieve the scepter and return it to Blackwell Keep. Reaching down, Henrik scooped up Kendra and deposited her astride his back.
"This is a dragon, you know?"
he asked. "Raxus, yes," Kendra said. Normally she would have been thrilled to see her old friend, but during their last conversation she had found he tended to side with Celebrant, his father, on the subject of the Dragon Rebellion. "I wonder what he wants to tell us." Air rushed past Kendra as Henrik zoomed along the wall. He clattered to a halt at the perch just as Raxus was about to land. The original perch had recently been demolished by Celebrant, but Seth had used a portable tower obtained from the giant Thronus to replace it. Kendra slid off the Alcitor. Quiet as a whisper, Raxus landed with a graceful swoop. Kendra knew firsthand that the dragon was a talented aerialist. Unusually small for a dragon, his body was comparable to the dimensions of a large horse, though his wings, neck, and tail added to his size. His glittering armor of silvery white scales reflected a prismatic sheen that hinted at his unusual origin. Raxus had been hatched by fairies. "Hi, Kendra," Raxus said without his usual enthusiasm, his voice like a group of teenage boys speaking in unison. "Can the moose guy go? I can speak more freely if we're alone."
"Could be a trick," Henrik warned, one hand straying to his bow.
"I'll take that risk," Kendra said. "Can we have some space? What's an arrow supposed to do? I'm not sure any dragon has tougher scales than Raxus." Henrik gave a humph and clomped away. Raxus brought his head close to Kendra, the streamlined surface gleaming brighter than chrome. "Thanks for the compliment, but I know my dad has harder scales, and I suspect several other—" "Stop being humble," Kendra said. "Are you doing all right?" Raxus asked. "I'm not hurt," Kendra said. "Dragons all over the world are rebelling. Bracken went missing when Soaring Cliffs fell." She clenched her fists at the mention of Bracken, willing away her tears and the sudden clogged feeling in her throat. "Sorry to hear that," Raxus said. "I tried to warn you." "I remember," Kendra said. "You could still get away," Raxus said. "This is just getting started. It will only get worse." "That means somebody has to stop it," Kendra said. "It's my job now. I'm the caretaker of Wormroost."
"Find a replacement," Raxus said.
Kendra sighed. "Do you think they would be using children as caretakers if they had replacements?"
"What they're doing is criminal," Raxus said. "Humans were never meant to run these big sanctuaries, let alone young humans. Aren't there laws against endangering human children?"
"Probably," Kendra said, "but people do what they must in emergencies. We can't let dragons take over the world. There would be no going back."
"It's too late," Raxus said. "Soaring Cliffs already got things started. More sanctuaries will follow. The dragons have waited a long time for this. They will not give up.
People had their turn running the planet.
Things are about to change."
"People allowed dragons to live in peace on sanctuaries," Kendra said. "Will dragons do the same for people?"
"We don't know what dragons will do," Raxus said. "They have been imprisoned in these giant cages you call sanctuaries for too long."
"Dragons used to roam free," Kendra said. "What did they do then?" Raxus looked away and spoke sulkily.
"They killed just about everybody they met."
"And then?" Kendra asked.
"Dragons fought to take over the world," Raxus said. "But that was after people started hunting them."
"People hunted dragons because dragons were already hunting people," Kendra replied. Raxus bowed his head.
"True."
"Dragons can't be let loose," Kendra said. "They were placed inside sanctuaries for a reason. Raxtus brought his head near again.
Maybe dragons wouldn't be the best caretakers of the world, he admitted quietly. But do we deserve to live out our existence, trapped like prisoners? And more importantly, it's too late to stop us. Then why is Celebrant still here? It's only a matter of time, Kendra. We will be free.
You're already free, because we trusted you. The other dragons are the prisoners.
Raxtus drew himself up straight. My father has asked me to stand with him and our kind.
I know, Kendra said. He assigned you to his personal guard.
I've never fit in, Kendra,
Raxtus said, almost pleading.
The timing is interesting, Kendra said. I knew you would say that,
Raxtus said, wounded.
This is a crucial time. Father is mustering all who will answer the call. But it's also because I did well at Zizzix. I finally proved myself.
And you're scared to risk what you gained, Kendra said.
Sure, we're friends, Kendra. But am I asking you to turn against your family? Your people? What would you say?
Did my family start including me for the first time a couple of months ago?
Raxtus stretched his wings and shook his head. I know it might not be real. I'm starved for acceptance, but not stupid. I know Father sent me today because he thinks it will help convince you.
Convince me of what? Kendra asked.
I have a message at the base of my neck, Raxtus said.
Only then did Kendra notice the small cylinder attached to the slender chain. You'll need to unclasp the chain.
Kendra approached, pulled the delicate chain until she found the clasp, and unhooked it.
She started trying to open the cylinder.
Don't bother, Raxtus said. You can read it later. It's an invitation to the Feast of Welcome.
What? Where?
Skyhold. My father's castle. Not his private lair at Moonfang. This is where he interacts with other dragons, where he rules.
Kendra laughed in disbelief.
I can't go there. I agree, Raxtus said. And you can't turn down the invitation, so you should leave.
I can't leave, Kendra said. Seth and I are the caretakers. We have to hold back the dragon uprising.
And why can't we turn down the invitation?
Because no caretaker ever has, Raxtus said. The dragons have the right to hold a feast once a year for the leaders of Wormroost. It would be an enormous insult to refuse.
It was a bigger insult when Celebrant tore down the perch and attacked this keep, Kendra said.
Father can be a bit extreme, Raxtus muttered.
That seems like enough reason to revoke his privileges as caretaker, Kendra asserted.
Keep dreaming, Raxtus said. You're brave, Kendra. I watched you strike down the Demon King, and you stood up to my father. Your defiance did more than enrage and embarrass him. It hurt his credibility. Already he has been challenged twice for his crown.
By other dragons?
Raxtus nodded.
For the first time in hundreds of years.
What happened?
Raxtus snorted. They got destroyed. Wasn't even close. They are resting in pieces.
Can any dragon take him?
Probably not for hundreds of years more. He is still in his prime. The dragons that tried were a couple of the most ambitious, but not the strongest. Father has been the undisputed king of dragons for so long for a reason. You shook that up. He wants you in pieces, too.
Hey, Raxtus! Seth called, running up to the perch.
Hi, Seth, the dragon replied.
Seth leaped over the parapet and dropped to the perch. He adjusted his caretaker's medallion around his neck.
At least you're one dragon that doesn't freeze me with fear.
Raxtus gave a chuckle.
Most dragons can increase the fear effect with willpower. When I try, people tend to relax.
Really?
Seth asked.
Do it!
Raxtus looked around, then spread his wings wide and gazed intently at Seth. The surfaces of his scales shimmered like sequins. Kendra took a deep, refreshing breath and felt tension ease from her body. She wanted to sit down, or maybe lie down. Seth slumped a bit and started to look drowsy. Raxtus folded his wings and assumed a regular posture. The shimmering ceased.
"Not bad," Seth said. "Perfect around nap time." "And another way I don't fit in," Raxtus said.
"Not all dragons are the same," Kendra reminded him. "Glamis was powerful enough to guard the dragon temple, and his breath put people to sleep."
"Glamis was huge," Raxtus said. "He put large groups and powerful creatures to sleep so he could devour them. But I see your point. Thanks."
"Are you still on the wrong team?" Seth asked. "Kendra told me last time you were siding with the dragons."
Raxtus gave a nervous laugh. "I want you guys safe. I really do. I'm not sure the dragons can be stopped."
"But you'll help us," Seth said.
"The best help I can give is advice," Raxtus said. "Don't fight this battle. Leave Wormroost. Lie low."
"You really got fooled by them," Seth said.
"They are my kind," Raxtus said. "Celebrant is my father."
"The Dragon King just invited us to a feast," Kendra told Seth, holding up the cylindrical container. "Are we the meal or the dessert?" Seth asked.
"You will be honored guests," Raxtus said. "Your safety is guaranteed."
"Guaranteed by the dragons who want us dead?" Seth asked.
"Guaranteed by the hospitality laws of the Preserve and of all magical folk," Raxtus said, "including dragonkind."
"It has to be a trap," Seth said. "He doesn't want to honor us."
"All of Wormroost is a trap," Raxtus said. "You should leave. I tell you because I care."
"Do you get a promotion if you scare us off?" Seth pressed.
Raxtus shifted his forelegs uncomfortably and swished his tail. "I'm helping you as best I can."
"We're trying to help your father," Kendra said, "and the dragons. We didn't come here to hurt them or to insult them. We are here to take care of them. Celebrant attacked us. He is supposed to be a caretaker. He is supposed to help us, not work against us."
"Dragons aren't meant to laze around in cages like some shabby old declawed circus lion," Raxtus said. "You can't give a dragon king a menial position and expect him to act like a human."
"You don't think he can be a real caretaker?" Kendra asked. "His duty is to watch over the sanctuary and take care of the creatures here. Is he unfit?"
"You're twisting my words," Raxtus said.
"You're backing the aggressors," Kendra said.
"Is the lion in the cage the aggressor?" Raxtus asked. "Or is it the prisoner?"
"Maybe not the lion," Kendra said, "but the convict is an aggressor. The convict goes to prison for a reason. Dragons were placed here for trying to destroy the world. They are the original aggressors. They live comfortably here. And now they want to fight."
"Actually, at the moment, they want you to feast," Raxtus said. "You have your invitation. Agad has attended in the past. Go ahead and ask him. You will give great offense if you refuse to attend. My father will use it against you. Your safety is guaranteed. And if you think nothing about it is safe, you're right. I better go."
"Yeah," Seth said. "Before I throw up. You used to be our friend."
"I love you too," Raxtus said. "I'm still trying to help. Leave Wormroost."
Raxtus sprang into the air, wings heaving down, making air rush over Kendra and Seth. Sparkling in the sunlight, the dragon swiftly rose into the sky. Chapter 3. Suspicions. Nox peered around the edge of the floral hedge, watching as butterflies, dragonflies, and fat bumblebees flocked around Tess. His younger sister sat cross-legged on the lawn, her pretend fairy wings in place, plastic wand in hand, as she held court for the insects, smiling and nodding. He leaned back behind the hedge, disgusted with himself. Was this what he had been reduced to? Spying on his boring sister? It was like secretly watching grass grow. Who cared? And yet, there were a lot of insects swirling around her. As usual. That didn't happen anywhere else. Were they attracted to her scent? Her glittery wings? So much about this place didn't add up. His parents had dumped him and his sister with his grandparents while they went driving around New England with his aunt and uncle. For the first little while, his cousins Kendra and Seth had been here, until they mysteriously went off to camp. Before Seth left, they had been attacked by a crazed bear that was finally fended off by a whirlwind. Then the weirdest thing had happened. Seth had appeared one day and urged him to climb inside a barrel. Nox had emerged a moment later at a castle full of people in a mountainous region. Surrounded by strange weather, Nox had retrieved a scepter from outside the castle walls. Not long after he succeeded, he had come back through the barrel to where Grandma and Grandpa Larson lived. Supposedly, it had all been some kind of virtual reality simulation that somehow wired directly into his senses. He knew there was no such technology, but he had half believed Seth's VR story at the time, because a barrel that could teleport him to a castle seemed even less plausible. But the more he thought about it, the surer he became that there had to be another explanation. Before he could examine the barrel in the living room, it had been moved by Grandpa Larson and Dale down into the basement. Later in the day, he had tried to enter the basement to investigate, but was stopped by a locked iron door. He felt sure Grandpa Larson was hiding something. Nox peeked around the hedge again. A large butterfly balanced on Tess's finger. She spoke to it animatedly. A dragonfly rested on her shoulder. Tess had a big imagination. She had tea parties with her stuffed animals, drew colorful pictures with crayons, and loved to pretend fairies were real. Though 10 years old, she looked and acted younger. She normally had zero attention span, hopping from idea to idea. He had never seen her as dedicated as she was to this game of the insects being fairies. She spent hours with them. Was it the novelty of the insects gathering around her? When would that excitement wear off? And did insects ever gather like this? Nox came out of hiding and stalked over to his younger sister. "Playing with the fairies?" he asked.
"They saw you behind the bush," Tess said.
"Is that a fairy on your finger?"
"Her name is Nora."
"Tell her to fly in a circle around your head," Nox suggested.
"She doesn't want to," Tess said.
"Because she is just a butterfly." Tess giggled.
"She has butterfly wings."
"Since she is a butterfly."
"They used to look like butterflies to me at first," Tess said. "Look hard."
Nox folded his arms. This was absurd. But something was going on. He got down on his hands and knees and stared closely at the butterfly on her finger. The violet wings had dark markings and seemed slightly translucent. He saw thin antennae, bulbous eyes, and a curled proboscis. It was definitely a butterfly.
"Not a fairy," Nox said.
"They told me the milk would help me see them," Tess said.
"What milk?"
"At first, I just saw and heard them a little," Tess said. "Mostly, they still looked like bugs, but I heard them sometimes." They tried to help me by telling me about the milk in the pans around the yard.
You drank it? Knox asked.
Tess made a disgusted face.
It was outside, and it was warm. I only like milk from the fridge.
You started seeing them better anyhow? Knox guessed.
All the time now, Tess said. It got easy.
But you're just pretending, Knox said.
Tess giggled.
Right?
He asked.
No, Tess said. It's funny because they are so obvious, and you think they're just bugs.
Because they are just bugs.
Tess looked at the insects and giggled.
He can't see you at all, she said.
Knox scowled. Something weird was going on here. What about running from a bear through the woods with goats, and going to an inexplicable castle? The bugs were all weirdly calm. They had settled on the grass all around them, as if interested in the conversation. Knox waved a hand, and several took flight, but none strayed far.
Don't make them mad, Tess warned. They have magic.
Knox felt a reflex to scoff, but resisted.
Where is the milk?
I don't know, Tess said. Around the yard. She stared at a dragonfly hovering near her, then looked back at her brother.
The closest one is under a bush over there, she pointed.
Where exactly? Knox asked. Tess got up and followed the dragonfly. The other insects stayed with them, loosely orbiting Tess. The dragonfly led them to a neatly trimmed bush. Beneath it, Knox found a tin saucer with milk in it. Some of the butterflies and dragonflies splashed in the milk.
The fairies like it, Tess said.
I don't want milk with bug germs in it, Knox said.
Fairies, not bugs, Tess said. But gross, right? Warm milk under a bush? Can't you just see the fairies? They're everywhere. Look hard.
Knox looked around again, but it was ridiculous. They were just insects, including a dragonfly that could lead them to milk when instructed. Something out of the ordinary was going on. Had been from day one. What if the milk could help unlock the answer? Was it crazy to try, or crazy not to try? Knox knelt down and pulled the saucer of milk out from under the bush. The insects cleared away, and the milk sloshed gently, not spilling. Knox lowered his face and sniffed. It didn't smell rotten.
Are you going to taste it? Tess asked.
Are you daring me? Knox replied.
Sure, Tess said.
Knox lowered his face to the pan, felt his puckered lips brush the creamy surface, and gently slurped. The inrush of air carried a milky spray into his lungs, and he coughed a little, but he also swallowed some. And suddenly, there were fairies everywhere. Small, slender, beautiful women with butterfly wings, dragonfly wings, and bumblebee wings fluttered around him. Several waved. High-pitched voices called,
"He sees us! He sees us!"
"There really are fairies,"
Knox said, staring in amazement, afraid to move. Tinkling laughter surrounded him.
"Aren't they beautiful?" Tess asked.
"They are,"
Knox admitted in amazement. The colors of their wings were brighter than they had been as butterflies. Even under the afternoon sun, the fairies had a glow to them, especially if they flitted into shadows.
"Now you can play with us," Tess said.
Knox looked at his sister.
"This is impossible. Fairies aren't real."
"Not just fairies," Tess said. "Little people in the house. A big dirt man. Goat guys."
Knox remembered Seth asking what he would think if he heard there were fairies around, or monsters. He had brushed off the questions as silly.
They were silly. Except for all the fairies he now saw. He held out a hand. "Come here. Land on me." No fairies approached. "They don't like to be bossed around," Tess said. "Please," Nox tried, deciding to lay it on thick. "You're so pretty, I just want to look." Three fairies all vied for a spot on his palm. A shimmering silver fairy won, her hair short and stylish, the little dress she wore revealing live limbs. Nox could feel her tiny bare feet against his skin. He carefully reached out and stroked a wing. The fairy giggled shyly. She was real. He could feel her, see her, the details all perfect. Fairies were real, and he had one in his hand. "You like my sister?" he asked.
"They don't talk much," Tess said. "I don't know if they all speak English."
"I hear you talking to them," Nox said.
"A few speak more than others," Tess said.
"We all enjoy your sister,"
a fairy said off to Nox's right, hovering not far from his head.
"And we all laugh at you."
All of the fairies tittered. The one on his palm leaped into the air. Nox tried to grasp her, but she darted away.
"Now he knows,"
a few fairies exclaimed.
"Now you know," Tess said.
"Why were they laughing at me?" Nox asked.
"Because you didn't believe," Tess said.
"Well," Nox said, "it seemed impossible. But now I get it. What else is real?"
"I told you," Tess said. "The goat guys. The dirt man. The little people in the house."
"Do you talk to them?" Nox asked.
"Not yet," Tess said.
"Do the goat guys normally look like goats?" Nox wondered, thinking about his adventure in the woods with Seth.
"How should I know?" Tess said. "They look like guys with goat legs to me."
"Thanks, Tess," Nox said. "See you fairies later. I need some answers." Nox dashed to the house. Grandma and Grandpa Larson had to know what was going on here. Seth did. Even Tess sort of did. Nox found Grandpa Larson in the kitchen making a sandwich. He looked up as Nox entered.
"Are you all right, Nox? You look flustered."
Nox paused. They stood in the kitchen with no evidence of magic anywhere. What if Grandpa Larson didn't know? He would look so foolish, but he could prove it. He knew where to find the milk.
"You have fairies," Nox blurted.
Grandpa Larson wiped mayo on a paper towel and set down the butter knife.
"I was beginning to wonder if you would figure it out. Some never do. I thought you would be full of questions after Blackwell Keep."
"You know about that?" Nox asked.
"Stan filled me in."
"Tess knows," Nox said.
"She plays with them a lot," Grandpa Larson said. "I wasn't sure yet how much was her own make-believe."
"She doesn't need the milk to see them," Nox said. Grandpa Larson raised his eyebrows.
"Are you sure?"
"She's never tried it," Nox said. "She sees them and talks to them. She led me to the milk."
"Incredible," Grandpa Larson said. "Unheard of."
"What is going on here?" Nox asked.
"Have a seat, my boy," Grandpa Larson said. "Allow me to introduce you to a larger, weirder world than you ever suspected."
Chapter 4. Decisions. Grandpa Sorensen removed his glasses and looked up from the invitation in his hand.
"A feast? At Skyhold? You have got to be kidding me."
"This is no joke," Agate
said.
"The consequences of snubbing the dragons could be serious."
Seth stood beside Kendra in Marat's private study. Agate, Grandpa Sorensen, Grandma Sorensen, Tanu, and Marat shared the room. Grandpa considered Newell and Doran too frivolous to participate in private councils,
Calvin remained in Seth's pocket. The chamber smelled of old books, spent candles, and wood polish, with a faint undercurrent of burnt hair. Seth stared at the various oddments assembled on desks and shelves, including several carved wooden boxes, an abacus, and a collection of animal teeth. He wondered if the large hourglass with blue sand really would last an hour if overturned. And why blue sand? Was it magical?
"More serious than our caretakers falling into enemy hands?" Grandma Sorensen asked.
"Potentially," Marat said. "Unless we provide a legitimate excuse and quickly offer to fulfill the request on an alternate date, Celebrant could claim Kendra and Seth have abandoned their post as caretakers."
"Celebrant was so mad the last time I saw him," Kendra said. "I know he wants revenge for us stopping his attack."
"You and Seth would be protected by hospitality law," Agate said. "Those protections are not only a matter of honor. If he violated them, Celebrant would lose his status as caretaker. Magical punishments would be brought to bear, and his good name would be ruined in the magical community."
"No dragon would violate hospitality code, simply as a matter of dignity," Marat said.
"A dragon of Celebrant status would not consider it."
"Raxus warned it wasn't safe," Seth said.
"Of course it isn't safe," Agate said swiftly. "The dragons will seek every advantage they can through the interaction. Other leaders of Worm Roost will no doubt be present. Celebrant will want to make you look foolish and incompetent. He will try to compromise your integrity. He will seek to intimidate you. And who knows what other motives he may have."
"But they won't eat us," Kendra said.
"Not at the feast," Marat said. "They will not physically harm you there."
"Should I go alone?" Kendra asked.
"Both caretakers were invited," Grandpa said. "At least the two of you should attend."
"I'll go too,"
Calvin offered from Seth's pocket.
"Who else could come with us?" Kendra asked.
"Only those who can resist dragon fear," Grandpa said.
"Marat?" Seth asked.
"None of dragon kind who have sided against their own should cross into Skyhold," Marat said. "Unless explicitly invited, we would be considered traitors, not visitors."
"That includes me and all true wizards," Agate said.
"Because you're all former dragons," Kendra mused.
"I could probably brew up a potion that would let me temporarily resist dragon fear," Tanu said.
"A courage potion?" Seth asked.
"A specific type of courage potion," Tanu said. "Tuned for dragons."
"Would it work on me?" Seth asked.
"Worth a try," Tanu said.
"I'd rather not hold hands the whole night," Seth said. "Might be awkward while eating," Kendra said. "And during every other second," Seth said. "Could anyone else come?" Kendra asked.
"Skyhold is high in the Ragged Mountains," Agate said. "The only practical way to arrive is by Griffin, and none could carry Henrik."
"Nobody else here can withstand dragon fear," Marat said.
"There is a road," Grandpa said. "The road to Skyhold is long and winding," Agate said. "I'm not sure Henrik could get there by tomorrow."
"With Tanu there, they will have trusted supervision," Grandma said.
"I'll supervise too," Calvin volunteered.
"I'm not sure whether our numbers at the feast will have much bearing on their safety," Marat said. "They will not face direct physical danger. A possible pitfall I foresee is Celebrant wanting to strike deals or alter the official relationship he has with you. That should be avoided."
"This all presupposes Kendra and Seth will choose to attend," Agate said.
"Sounds like we better," Seth said. "Celebrant is up to something," Kendra murmured. "I know," Seth said, "but Agate already explained that Celebrant can't attack us there. Don't you trust Agad? Yes, of course, Kendra said. We'll just need to be extra smart.
She eyed her brother.
I'm always smart, Seth said. He's smarter with me, Calvin said.
Okay, I'm in, Kendra said. We can't abandon our duty. With all the unrest, we need to strengthen our position as caretakers, not weaken it.
What can we do there to help our cause? Seth asked. Spy?
Keep all eyes and ears open, Agad said. Most important, you must go and return without weakening your position. At present, with the scepter in our possession, the dragons simply cannot invade Blackwell Keep, no matter their numbers. We need to keep it that way. Enter no agreements with Celebrant, regardless of how enticing they may seem. Just coming home will be a victory.
How many feasts can they throw? Kendra asked.
If you attend this one, we should be in the clear for at least a year, Marat said.
Other leaders of the various factions at Wormroost will be present, Agad said.
Like who? Seth asked.
The leaders of the protected territories, Agad said. Lord Dalgarel of Terabel. Raj Farana of the Zawali Protectorate, Grand Imperator Karzal of Gunderton, Amulon of the Herdlands, and Lowly Vodka of the Sludge Holes.
I know Dalgarel, Seth said. None of the rest. The Zawali Protectorate are the talking animals, Kendra said. What was the name of their leader?
Raj Farana is a mighty tiger, Marat said. His territory has long been allies of the caretakers.
They send you the mute Luvians, Kendra said.
Yes, very good, Agad said. Fascinating to watch those horses read. I find it calming. Gunderton is the known kingdom, run by Karzal.
The Grand Impersonator, Seth said.
Imperator, Grandpa clarified. You want to master that word. Gnomes can be bristly.
Amulon rules the Taurans here, Marat said. That includes the Alcitors, like Henrik, the Servitors, who are half-deer, the Rumitors, who are half-elk, and some Centaurs.
What type is Amulon? Seth asked.
Rumitor, Agad said, with a grand rack of antlers projecting from his head.
A human head with antlers? Seth checked.
Yes,
Agad said.
Sweet,
Seth said, holding his hands up to his forehead, fingers splayed. What about the last one? Kendra asked.
Lowly Vodka might be the least likely to attend, Marat said. She speaks for the inhabitants of a marshy region called the Sludge Holes.
She has the best name, Seth said.
Vodka is a fairly powerful hag, Agad said. Her philosophy is that a leader should be the servant of all, hence the lowly title. She has managed to unite several races under her influence.
Will it be good for us to meet these people? Kendra asked.
The dragons will be working hard against us, Marat said. We need all the allies we can muster.
None of the leaders of the Free Territories want the dragons to overthrow Wormroost, Agad said. But some may expect it is inevitable, and align themselves accordingly. We want as many leaders as possible to believe you can hold control of the Sanctuary. It would not hurt to make friends.
Aren't the fair folk always neutral? Seth asked.
Generally, yes, Marat said. But they will quietly assist one side or the other when it suits them. All members of the Free Territories have magical protections that would hold even if the preserve fell, but they would all prefer for it to survive.
If the Sanctuary falls, they lose their outermost defenses, Agad said, and they no longer have caretakers watching over their interests. If the preserve falls and the dragons so choose, the territories will not last.
which is why some might hope to align themselves with Celebrant,
Marat said.
The dragons are a big enough threat. We'd rather not have the whole preserve turn against us.
Isn't a festival night coming up in a few days?
Tanu asked.
The summer solstice?
Another problem, Grandpa said with a sigh.
I imagine a festival night is especially violent here, Grandma said.
Agad and Marat exchanged a tense glance.
We avoid meddling in the festival nights, Marat said.
It is pandemonium from dusk till dawn,
Agad agreed.
We hide behind our defenses until the night ends.
Seth had lived through some festival nights at Fablehaven, when many of the ordinary boundaries at the preserve fell, and the inhabitants could run wild for a night. His first festival night was the most memorable, when he had made the house vulnerable by opening a window and almost getting his grandparents killed. Wormroost was a much larger sanctuary than Fablehaven. He could only imagine how dangerous Midsummer Eve might be with dragons involved.
The feast is tomorrow, Kendra said. Let's survive that first.
The solstice comes 3 days later, Grandma said.
You would depart early tomorrow evening,
Agat said.
Then return that same night.
Can I take Tempest? Seth asked.
Her wild nature served you well dodging and outrunning dragons, Marat said. But for this outing, steady, experienced griffins would be the wise choice. You want the evening to go smoothly.
Kendra, Seth, Grandpa said, if you, Calvin, and Tanu are doing this, we have logistics to manage. You are determined to attend?
Kendra nodded.
A whole castle full of dragons, Seth said reverently. I wouldn't miss it.
After the meeting, Kendra wandered over to the churchyard, picking her way through the gravestones until she found the one marking her ancestor, Patton Burgess. Most of the headstones around it were broken or tilted. Some were worn smooth. Patton's sturdy marker still bore a clear inscription. Patton Burgess, word to the wise, tread lightly among dragons. Kendra knew there was no body in the grave. The headstone was a fake to appease some dragons who had been disgruntled at Patton. She also knew that the headstone extended far beneath the ground and contained a secret message that had helped her find one of the keys to Zizix, the demon prison. But reading his name still helped her feel close to Patton. This was a monument to someone she knew and loved. Someone who had helped her in times of need. Though he had died long before she was born, Kendra had met him, thanks to a time-travel device called the chronometer. She wished he were here now. There never seemed to be a problem he couldn't handle.
Everyone is depending on me, Kendra said quietly. I'm worried this feast with dragons is just the beginning. One of the dragon sanctuaries has already fallen. Bracken is lost. The whole world is falling apart, and I'm supposed to hold it together.
The headstone had no reply.
Maybe you're the lucky one, Kendra said. You already lived your life. How did you last so long, through so much danger? The stress alone feels like enough to crack me up sometimes.
She tried to imagine Patton, calm and confident.
How would he have answered her question?
One day at a time? One crisis at a time? Doing what had to be done, wishing on a lucky star, eating her vitamins? Her imagination felt insufficient. Kendra looked at the fortress around her. It was so big to have a staff of roughly 20, a misfit skeleton crew of people and magical folk. Blackwell Keep could easily have housed hundreds. Most walls and towers looked abandoned. She felt less like the commander of a fort and more like the watchperson of a derelict castle.
Would hundreds of defenders matter against a dragon? Couldn't a geyser of flame roast 100 soldiers as easily as 5? The real protection came from the treaty that had founded Wormroost and the magical defenses